my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1, 2, 3 cents of a podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger. Woo!
Hey everyone, it's episode 247 of My 1, 2, 3 Cents, the podcast, and I do appreciate you listening and testing out the new format. Of course, last week it was Two is Greater Than One with my friend and now, as we know, tag team partner for Thursday night, August 29th at Rent One Park in Marion, Illinois, Heath Hatton. We are taking on the Stride Pro Wrestling Tag Team Champions, the Sin City Saints, Jay Spade, and Tony Flood. It's kind of been a story building up for quite some time now, and I'm excited to get back into the ring, this time in tag team competition. But I will not lie to you either. I am 46 years old, and I've had two matches under my belt, so Jay Spade, Tony Flood are great competitors in the ring, and of course, Heath Hatton is amazing as well. We talked pretty extensively about his time in WWE and some of the training that he has done since then as well, and I'm looking forward to future episodes with Tyler, with Heath, because I have a list of topics and subjects that I want to talk about with him and pick his brain and kind of get inside of his brain on some issues. So that will be the first Monday of every month, so I'm looking forward to that. The second Monday of every month is going to be called What If? And this month, Chad Smart from Positive Cynicism joins me, and we tackle, since we just passed the 20-year anniversary of Chris Jericho's debut in the WWE, that's the issue that we take in hand. What if Chris Jericho had not jumped to the WWF in 1999? And it's a fun conversation. We talk about a few other things as well, and kind of we don't really go overly extensive into Jericho's career, but talk mostly about that debut and how iconic it was. And Chris Jericho is still, you know, I know he's in AEW. I know he has said some things about WWE, and I know a lot of people have, and I am still a Jericho fan. In fact, Chris Jericho, and I did a video on this back in January on the My 1-2-3 Cents YouTube channel. Chris Jericho actually influenced my run streak for... I had started a running streak back on May 1st, 2016. Some of my other running friends were doing it, and it's just basically you have to run at least a mile every day. It's a pretty simple guideline, but I kept it going, and I wanted to get what they call get the comma, which means you run 1,000 days or more. Well, when I hit 1,000, and before I hit 1,000, I knew, because Chris Jericho had the gimmick in WCW being the man of 1,004 holds to kind of mock Dean Malenko's man of 1,000, was it 1,000 holds or 1,001 holds? I don't remember what Dean Malenko's moniker was, but my plan then was, okay, I'm going to have a Chris Jericho-inspired run streak and end it on day 1,004, and that's what I did. So Chris Jericho is pretty influential. I've even written a blog when my wife was pregnant with our first child. I wanted to name him Jericho. We had a list of names, and this was Chris had just jumped to WWF at that point. It was, our son was born in January of 2000, so he was newly minted in the WWE, WWF, and we had a list of names, and I had Jericho on my list, but it got vetoed, obviously. Jericho Huntsberger. I don't know now as a nearly 20-year-old how that name would have worked out. I don't know how it would have been through school. I think it would have been awesome, but yeah, I digress. We settled on Ethan instead. So, but yeah, I'm telling you these quick little antidotes because I am a Chris Jericho fan, and I really was impressed with his debut, and we get more into that in the show. And as I mentioned, Chad Smart is my guest co-host. He is the host of Positive Cynicism here on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network. You can also listen to Greg Mahochko and Mike Luther as they talk about all things nerd-related on the Nerds United podcast. And Greg also co-hosts a second show here called Five Heart, which is all about Nebraska Cornhusker athletics. It is football season, I am sure. Things are ramping up quite nicely over there for the Husker Nation or the Corn Nation. I'm not exactly sure what they call it because I am not a sports fan, but definitely want to check out Greg's show, Five Heart, as well. There is a store on jitterymonkey.com up on the right corner if you click shop. And of course, you can get Positive Cynicism, My 1-2-3 Cents, Five Heart, and Nerd United swag of various colors and sizes and shapes and objects. So check that out. And if you are looking for more My 1-2-3 Cents items, head on over to prowrestlingtees.com/My 1-2-3 Cents. And then finally, the Collar and Elbow brand, which is something I don't really talk a whole lot about, but I really like their shirts. I have several in my own collection, but it's collarelbowbrand.com. And if you use the promo code MY123Cents, you save 10% on your order. So, and I believe right now they have a SummerSlam sale. I don't quote me on it. I'm not sure when it ends. I didn't double check before I started recording this. But you can check that out as well. And just follow them on Twitter. It's Al Snow's company, but it's Collar and Elbow Brand. And they'll hook you up with some quality stuff as well. Speaking of SummerSlam, as I record this open, it is the morning of SummerSlam. I did not watch NXT TakeOver yet because there was a Stride Pro Wrestling IWA Productions show in Benton. It was a fundraiser Saturday night, and Scott Steiner was the special guest. It was kind of a Stride versus IWAP event. I had a good time, though. I always do. I co-ring announced with a fella named Mr. Riccolo, who is from the Chicago area. So it was good to meet him and see another ring announcer's technique and perspective on things. But yeah, it was a good time. And Stride, again, has several more shows over the next probably 6 weeks or so, including this Friday night, August 16th at the Pulaski County Fair. This will be an outdoor show. I'm looking forward to that. It should be a fun night. And then on the 29th, as I mentioned off the top, we'll be at Rent One Park in Marion, Illinois. It's baseball. It's going to be wrestling, baseball, and then more wrestling. And that is going to be that tag team title match I mentioned with myself and Heath Hatton taking on the Sin City Saints of Jay Spade and Tony Flood. Then I know we have a show on September 7th and then a show on September 14th in Centralia, which is another fundraising endeavor. So busy time for sure. Work is going well and family life going pretty well. Also, kids are getting ready to head back to school. So it's all, you know, things are evolving and changing. Next week, by the way, my guest will be Red Daniels, who is the Stride Pro Wrestling Heavyweight Champion. We're going to talk about beer in an episode of Wrestling Under the Influence. I don't know what beer I'm letting him pick it, because he is kind of venturing into the craft beer drinking world. I'm looking forward to sitting down with Red once again and sharing a beer. He actually did an episode of this Wrestling Under the Influence with me a while back, so we'll talk a little bit more about that, of course, next week right here on My 1-2-3 Cents and Jittery Monkey. But stay tuned for What If Chris Jericho had not left WCW.
Then tonight, in front of all the Rock fans, you will go one-on-one with the Great One.
Rock laying down a challenge to the Big Show tonight.
And go on and check your big fat ass directly into the SmackDown Hotel.
Big Show's gonna need a big king-size bed, isn't he? Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
It's the Millennium Clock.
It's the Millennium,
JR.
10, 9,
8,
countdown.
6, 5,
to the Millennium.
4,
we're counting down.
It's
3,
here.
2,
we're counting it
The second Monday of each month is going to feature something called What If, where I will take a scenario with a guest co-host and kind of rework it and speculate, if you will, on what if the big event hadn't happened. And in this particular case, since we are on the 20-year anniversary, it was on Friday, of Chris Jericho jumping to the World Wrestling Federation, I decided to have Chad Smart from Positive Cynicism on to talk more about that move. And Chad, welcome back once again to My 1-2-3 Cents.
Yeah, thanks for having me. When I come on your show, can I change my name to Mark Smart and be the Smart Mark?
You can. You can do whatever you want, man. It's a new format. It's a new world. It's a new feel here. And I have given you credit. I know you say I steal it, but the inspiration for breaking down My 1-2-3 Cents into four, what do you call yours? Episodes?
Editions.
Four editions each month with that, you know, rotating week as a, you know, wild card whenever that happens, if there is a fifth week in a particular month, a fifth Monday for specifically. And I know you do that with Positive Cynicism too. How are things going over on the Positive Cynicism channel?
They're going okay. We had some technical difficulties this past week with our political episode. We recorded on the Sunday night. Our show comes out on Tuesday. We recorded Sunday night and then found out that all the audio was garbage because of static, and it's one of the drawbacks of having a co-host that lives on the other side of the country.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just be like, hey, let's re-record, even though it's 1 o'clock in the morning in your time zone when I find this out. And so we re-recorded Tuesday night and got about halfway through the show, audio messed up again. So not the best. I was kind of disappointed in, one, I don't like to repeat myself. So once we already had recorded the show, I didn't really feel like going back and discussing the same things that we had discussed about, or talked about. So that was a little bummer. But other than that, everything seems to be going good. When this episode drops, episode 100, and I believe it's 5 of Positive Cynicism, will come out the day after. And we're going to be looking, that's our kind of fandom, I don't have a name for it yet, type show. I really should, after a year and almost a half of doing it. Probably should come up with a name. But we're going to be looking at if there's too much information. You know, right now when a movie, used to be when a movie came out, you didn't know about it until you saw the trailer in the theater or saw an ad in the paper. Now you know a movie as soon as it gets a release date, before there's even a script, and you know who all's in it and all the hype. And so we're going to look at if that's a good or a bad thing.
Okay, I like it. I like that that vibe that you've got going on. And something else you're doing this month, and it's going to kind of parlay into part of this discussion on Chris Jericho. On Twitter, you are making a more conscious effort to tweet positivity. I almost said positive cynicism, but you are, you know, reaching out and recognizing some folks and whatnot. It's a great idea. How's it been going with trying to kind of spread a little positivity, especially over the past week or two, where we've seen a lot of heartache and despair in this country?
Yeah, it kind of started last month. I got the idea in July because, yeah, you turn on the news, you go onto social media, and it's just doom and gloom and complaining and whining. And I was just like, I'm sick of it. I'm tired. I've always said there's enough negativity in the world. I don't need to add to it. So I thought for my own mental health, like, I wanted to focus more on the positive. And so I went through my social media and unfollowed anybody who was mostly a negative source of information or tweets or whatever. So, and then I came up with the idea that on Twitter I am reaching out, not really reaching out, just giving thanks, a shout out to people that have inspired me or people that I think are doing well in their respective fields. And then on the personal level is I send a text message every day, and I've been alternating it between family one day, friends the next, and just letting people, you know, close to you know that they matter to you. And I think, I've gotten a good reception. I haven't got any negative, like, why are you telling me this? This is stupid. You know, it's all like, oh, thanks. You know, that's really good to hear, and hope everything's going well. So I encourage listeners out there, do the same thing. And we said it quite a bit, but if you're on social media and your first instinct into something you see is to tweet or post something negative or critical, stop, count to 10, ask yourself if it really needs to be said and if it's going to help dialogue in. Because I there's nothing wrong with a negative comment or a critique, but just ask yourself if it's going to make the discussion go in a somewhat positive direction before you say it.
That's good to live by, and I find myself not as often as I used to because my working conditions have changed significantly, but I would type out a tweet and then I would delete it because I'm like, this is way too snarky or way too, to steal your phrase, cynical.
That's not my phrase. I think Merriam-Webster coined it.
That's... You're such an asshole. But yes, as we're talking about being positive, and then I am, by the way, exempt from the positive tweets. I'm still fair game, and I've told Chad that. So we have a good time. We have a lot of fun, and it is an important message to remember the positive side of things. And I want to kind of talk about, because it deals with Twitter and it also deals with being positive and it also deals with our topic tonight, and that is Chris Jericho. And I don't know who started it. I just kind of picked up and saw some of the tweets and whatnot, but Matt Riddle, who is NXT superstar, of course, affiliated with WWE, and Chris Jericho seemed to have a war of words of sorts going on Twitter, or they did earlier in the week as we're recording this a few days before the show actually drops. But I know you and I kind of exchanged a couple of texts or snaps about it as well. What do you make of you know, and if you don't want to specifically talk about these two, but, you know, this kind of will these kind of situations ramp up with AEW and NXT specifically, since they will be opposing each other? But will the WWE wrestlers, superstars defend their product against AEW? And we saw it with Seth Rollins and Will Ospreay not too very long ago either.
I think, that seems to be the way the business, I guess, is going. Because you know, you have Becky Lynch tweeting out things with whoever she is feuding with, and right now, as we record this a few days before SummerSlam, Charlotte Flair and Trish Stratus have kind of gone back and forth. As far as Matt Riddle and Chris Jericho, Matt Riddle has been very outspoken on Twitter about not being a fan of Goldberg.
Yeah, he says a lot of things that really surprises me.
What's that?
He says a lot on social media that, you know, because Goldberg is still obviously a WWE talent. I know he's not a regular, but he's going to be at SummerSlam as well. Or as we are recording this, he will have been at SummerSlam. But it's surprising to me that he gets away with or is able to say some of the things that he has said.
Well, I think part of that is because Vince McMahon has no clue who Matt Riddle is. But it's also, yeah, so I think Matt Riddle has been, you know, saying derogatory things about Goldberg and how he's the worst and all this. And then I, from what I picked up on it, because I don't follow, I see it like on news sites who, because again, for some reason, Twitter is like the new go-to news source.
Yeah.
Not only wrestling, but mainstream media. It's very annoying to read an article that just quotes tweets and then posts pictures of the tweets. So if you're out there, Yahoo journalists, stop doing that. But it appears that Matt Riddle has had some criticism from guys like Lance Storm and I think Goldberg. And then what I saw was someone had tweeted a page from Jericho's first book about a promo that he had done with Davey Boy Smith. And it's a classic story of Jericho being a young kid talking about how old Bulldog was and, you know, he was past his prime and he was going to beat him and whatever. And Bulldog pulled him aside after the promo and said, you know, one, I'm going to be beating you. So when you get beat, you just got beat by an old man. So you're going to look foolish. But if you were to beat me, you just beat an old man.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing there, you know.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's kind of like Matt Riddle saying, oh, Goldberg, you're the worst. I can beat you. And it's like, well, then if he's the worst and you don't beat him, you know, and I would say that right now, given their status, if that match were to happen on a WWE show, Goldberg would most likely go over.
Right.
And then for some reason, Matt Riddle posted another video of him, clowning on Jericho. And then Jericho posted a response, which was mocking Riddle's performance.
The mocking was pretty good.
What's that?
The mocking video that Jericho did was actually, and I like Matt Riddle, I like Chris Jericho, but Jericho's response was pretty funny.
I mean, it was funny, but it was just like, does this make me want to see a match between the two? Which one isn't going to happen? And
right.
Does it make me actually want to see either one of them in a match at all?
Mm-hmm.
No. I mean, that's my personal taste, but then again, I'm not down with the bros like you are, and I think Chris Jericho has kind of turned into what he was railing against 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll touch more on that later in the show.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess bottom line here is, and I if I remember correctly, you don't follow many wrestlers from your personal Twitter account, so you don't, like you said, you don't see a lot of it. And that is kind of the ugly side, or I say ugly side, the less desirable side of, because I like Twitter because at one point there was a hell of a lot less drama there than there is on Facebook, but now when things like this pop up and it's like, if this is, you know, if this is how the new wrestling war is going to be, I don't know that I'm ready for that, because I can't imagine how social media would have been 20 years ago during the heat or the heart of the Monday Night War between WCW and WWF at the time. Could you imagine back then, had Twitter and Facebook and all that been a thing?
I'm sure, you know, we were 20 years younger, so I'm sure we would have been joining right in and going along with it. But
that's true.
It's my problem would be, like, there's one account that I do follow. It's Richard Land, which I'm sure you're familiar with from the OBP podcast.
Mm-hmm.
He's a tape collector, and he had tweeted out something a couple days before we record this. It was a clip from Saturday night's main event of The Undertaker like, turning face back in whatever year that was, in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
And I think I saw that retweeted by probably at least a good 10 people that I follow. And so it was just clogging up my timeline. Because I'd scroll, you'd see that video, then tweet by somebody else, then the video again, and then a couple tweets, and then that video. And I'm like, so I can imagine if you're actually following a large number of these wrestlers who are going to be retweeting or tweeting at each other, what that is like on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, it does get exhaustive. So let's get in our Wayback Machines and go to a time before social media. Of course, it is the summer of 1999, and we are building up to what I would consider probably... I would still consider this obviously the Attitude Era, and obviously the Monday Night War is still somewhat going on, but WWF has really taken charge and kind of trounced WCW, and WCW is still kind of reeling from that, but it is the summer of 99, and Chris Jericho is, speaking of Bill Goldberg, we talked about him earlier, not seeing eye to eye with management in terms of a booking idea with Bill Goldberg. And Jericho, and actually Eric Bischoff, just recently talked about this on 83 Weeks. And I would imagine by the time this show drops, the Bruce Pritchard podcast will have dropped of the 20 years of Chris Jericho, and I'm sure there will be stories about this as well. But long story short, part of Jericho's frustration in WCW was the lack of creative, the lack of push, if you will, and him wanting to wrestle Goldberg on pay-per-view and that not happening, and kind of having that meeting with Hogan, Goldberg, and Bischoff, and learning that nobody was really a part of that plan or on board with that. And Jericho, without a doubt, was one of the more celebrated cruiserweights. He was a four-time cruiserweight champion in WCW, and was the television champion as well for part of that of his run there. What were your overall thoughts of Chris Jericho when he was first coming up in WCW? I can still remember watching WCW Saturday Night. I think it was in mid to late 95 when Jericho first came out. And, you know, I thought he was decent, but he was at cookie cutter baby face, I thought, at the very beginning of his run.
I don't remember much about, like, Jericho debuting in WCW. But as he started to rise through like 96, 97, I was a huge Jerichoholic. Mm-hmm. I thought he was great. I don't know how much freedom he had over his character or, you know, feuds, because it did seem like WCW was more focused on the top of the card and let the cruiserweights and the mid-carders do whatever they wanted because no one was paying attention. Which seems kind of similar to some things today. But Jericho was, the man of 1,004 holds when he was feuding with Dean Malenko. That whole feud is probably the highlight of his career, his time in WCW. And he was a fresh talent that knew how to work the crowd and could back it up in the ring. And, you know, it's easy to say that, oh, well, when you have guys like Eddie Guerrero, Rey Mysterio, Juventud, all these good workers, that, you know, you could probably put them in there with a broomstick and get a decent match, especially when guys like Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, Kevin Nash are on the top of the card. And that's, I don't mean to disrespect them, but, you know, their time had kind of was on the downward slope.
Right.
So Jericho, he stood out, and, you know, he should have probably, and most likely should have been pushed higher on the card and given a, you know, he even said his feud with Goldberg, he didn't want to win, but it was just something to elevate himself in the eyes of the fans.
Right. And you know, you mentioned Hogan and Hall and Nash and Piper and Savage. You know, many of those guys had been around 10 to 15 years at that point, and not just been around, but been on top for that long. And so it was obviously a time where WCW was still, for lack of a better phrase, you know, Eric Bischoff, and no offense to him, but it seemed like a lot of the decision makers had their, you know, heads up their asses, or you know, and by this point, Bischoff is near burnout and has said that, you know, he would be let go in September of 99. So just shortly after Jericho jumped ship, Bischoff is out as well, comes back a little bit later. But that notwithstanding, it, you know, it seemed like WCW or WWF was going for that youth movement and was making opportunities available. And I'll never forget August 9th, 1999, when Chris Jericho, you know, that summer we see the, because of course, for those of you who remember, the year 2000 was just around the corner, and we were talking about Y2K and how computer systems could crash and how, you know, it was a legitimate concern. I was working in the news at the time, and, you know, everybody was doing news stories about it, and we were talking about it. It was kind of like, you know, back at the start of that whole 24-hour news cycle where we needed some kind of talking point, and this was the thing to kind of keep people busy, was Y2K. Well, WWF, brilliantly, in my opinion, played off of that with a clock counting down, but we didn't know what it was counting down to at the time. And then one night, on a Monday night, the middle of Raw, the clock countdown starts up as The Rock is in the middle of the ring cutting a promo, and boom, lo and behold, it's Chris Jericho. The music hits. I love the iconic sound of that clock, the way the fans popped when he showed, you know, you see his name go across the screen. He's standing there on the ramp and greets everyone with "Welcome to Raw is Jericho." And people went crazy. And that was a bold move, I thought, putting Chris Jericho in a verbal sparring match with The Rock on his very first day in the company.
Yeah, I don't think that's something that would happen today, because putting, you know, a new star over doesn't seem like the most, it's just not something that happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I, if I remember correctly, he didn't even end up feuding with The Rock as his first feud.
No. Not initially.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It was just, but I think you had two of the best talkers go back and forth is a good way to introduce him. And, you know, he was a big enough name that people, because I always say, you know, you have wrestling fans and you have WWE fans,
mm-hmm.
or WWF fans. But I think even the WWF at the time fans knew who Jericho was. You know, it would be like, for sake of argument, with AEW right now, if MJF shows up on Monday Night Raw on Monday, a lot of people will probably be scratching their heads. And, you know, even though, you know, I'll make the comparison that MJF is probably the modern day Chris Jericho,
mm-hmm.
Going to be. But yeah, because everyone knew who Jericho was, and I think a lot of people had figured it out that it was going to be Jericho or were expecting him, yeah, that, you know, the roof was blown off the place. And mm-hmm. then he, you know, to his credit, held his own against The Rock. And I'm going to guess, I have no idea, but I'm going to think that this is probably in the time before promos were scripted word for word. So he and The Rock probably had a few bullet points and just went out there and riffed on each other. And it set the stage for Jericho and WWE.
Yeah, it was absolutely one of my favorite moments from Monday Night Raw. And, you know, just kind of that anticipation. And you know, I kind of almost feel like once he got there and that initial debut was over, and then, and you know, this isn't to knock China. I know he feuded with China. They were co-holders of the Intercontinental Championship. Some would argue that that kind of tainted his legacy as an Intercontinental Champion, even though he, I believe, still holds the record for the most reigns, or The Miz may be up there now too, but you know, without a doubt, that move, that jump, was the right move for his career and taking him to absolute new heights, becoming the undisputed WWE Champion, holding the world title, the WWE Championship, the Intercontinental title, the U.S. title, the tag team titles. I believe he was even hardcore champion at one point. Chris Jericho literally did it all.
Don't forget, he beat The Rock and Stone Cold in the same night.
Right, yes. Yes, and I wonder if he'll mention that at all in AEW. Probably not, but... So let's, you know, the whole point of this podcast, though, is what if. So what if, let's put the brakes on it, and for whatever reason, whether his contract, he can't get out of it, or he decides to stick around, or he decides that jumping to the WWF, or perhaps Vince McMahon isn't interested in him at that point. Chris Jericho stays in WCW. Where do you see him... positioned throughout the rest of WCW's run, which is roughly 18 months after Jericho's jump?
I will say that Jericho would probably be in the same position that he was in August of 1999 or July of 1999. He would probably have a few more cruiserweight title runs, probably the television title, maybe the U.S. They might placate him. By not putting him, you know, not elevating him to world title status. They may give him a U.S. title run. But overall, I think he may have gotten burnt out or frustrated. And not I don't want to say, you know, phoned it in, but I don't think we would have gotten the brilliance of Chris Jericho in that last year and a half before WCW folded. I think he would have just been mid-carder and someone that you could throw in to have a good match, but he was never going to, you know, he was never going to have a match with Goldberg or Hogan or Nash, at least not a serious match where he didn't get squashed in short order.
Yeah, I agree. Even with Russo coming over not long after this, I just don't know. Honestly, when Jericho did go over, and I feel like had he not been introduced in such a grandiose way where it felt important, it wasn't just a, you know, hey, let's send him out there and have him beat up some jabroni, or, you know, have him debut against an enhancement talent on Sunday Night Heat. You know, it felt like an important debut, and as we mentioned, he's interrupting The Rock, which at that point, you know, Rock and Stone Cold were the two biggest names in WWE, and some would argue even in all of wrestling at that time. So to be a part of that, I think that instantly put him on a footing that made it then believable when he got in there and was wrestling Austin and The Rock, you know, later down the road, and when the Radicals came over, and you know, he's feuding with Chris Benoit, and then teaming with Benoit, or, you know, wrestling Eddie or whoever it was. There was, you know, I think had they not debuted him that way, I don't know that he would have had that almost instant credibility with the fans, where he showed us that what he could do with The Rock. And then he, you know, went in there and became the champion and wrestled Triple H at WrestleMania. And, you know, then later down the road, the feuds with Shawn Michaels or John Cena, Christian, whoever it may have been. I just think that had they not done the debut the way they did, that wouldn't have worked.
Yeah, and I want to back up real quick because, like probably most WCW fans, I completely forgot the Bischoff-Russo era. I would say looking back now, if Jericho had stayed, he probably would have been put into the Billy Kidman role in the New Blood versus the Millionaires Club feud.
Mm.
Just because I think Jericho would have been a bigger name to put in there. But it would have probably played out exactly like it did with Billy Kidman,
mm-hmm.
where he gets a few cheap shots on Hogan, but ultimately, you know, Hogan's not going to do the job, and then Jericho just kind of looks like a fool.
Yeah, and then, you know, like we said, so, you know, in this scenario, of course, we are suggesting that Jericho either stays in WCW and stays kind of in that stagnant spot where he is kind of stuck, or he simply gets frustrated and leaves, and we don't see him on the main stage at all. But obviously then March 2001 rolls around, and Vince McMahon buys WCW. Now, when that happened, we saw some names... you know, not stick around with the Turner contracts, the AOL Time Warner contracts, the likes of Diamond Dallas Page, Lance Storm, who was Jericho's partner a long time ago, and Booker T, probably three of the more notable names that instantly come over to WC.
Who better than Canyon?
Who better than Canyon? Okay, yes, you're right. But I'm curious. I wonder if Chris Jericho would have been one of those guys that would have been chomping at the bit to get into the ring. It seemed like a lot of the, you know, and this is no disrespect to anyone, because I think if I were in the position of a Kevin Nash or a Hulk Hogan, I would have stayed at home too. But, you know, at the time, the young guys like Chavo and Canyon and Booker T and Lance Storm are ready to go and sign instantly and get in there and get going. I wonder how the invasion could have been perceived differently had Chris Jericho been on WCW's side from the get-go. Because I know, you know, he obviously had that background as well. A little bit of a background, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, he was a part of ECW as well.
Yeah, I was going to throw another tangent, but I'll get back to that because I want to stay on the point you're making. I think had he stayed in WCW, he would have been signed. I think he would have taken the deal if WWF had offered it to come over during the invasion. I don't think he would have been debuting like the same way that he did in 99.
Mm-hmm.
I think he probably would have been somewhat lumped in with guys like Chavo and Canyon and who the hell hired Raven?
Yeah.
You know, where it would have been, you know, mid-card feud probably against an upper mid-card guy like Edge, Christian, the Hardys, but probably would have been on the losing end for that first 6 months to a year. And then ultimately, I think we eventually get to where Jericho got to in WWE because he had the talent, and especially in WWE, he had the voice. He had the mouth to, you know, make the people either buy into him or hate him.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be not necessarily a lost art, but the skill level of which Jericho has is not something that I would say probably 70% of the roster possesses.
So what was the side tangent you were going to hit?
Okay, so alternate reality, multiverse. Mm-hmm. Chris Jericho in the multi-Jericho-verse. He gets frustrated in WCW 99. There's no interest from WWE. Gives a call to Paul E., and he goes back to ECW for the year and a half until ECW goes out of business. Then...
Mm.
You know, ECW was obviously a bigger name at that time than when Jericho was there in 94, 95. I think he probably would have been ECW champion at some point.
Yeah.
And I think then, you know, you still bring him in to the invasion angle only as part of ECW. And then he might have been a little bit higher footing, you know, like the Dudley Boys, or but I think that's really the high watermark for the ECW talent. I'm trying to think who else. Rob Van Dam.
RVD, yeah.
But so yeah, eventually eventually by 2001, Chris Jericho is in WWE. It's basically what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I don't think there's any denying that by hook or by crook, he was going to end up in WWE. I don't know that he would have had the trajectory, though, like you said, had he come in with the WCW guys, even if he had come in as the former ECW champion, if that scenario would have played out, I don't know that he would have become, you know... It's hard to argue that Jericho's not one of the all-time greats, not only in the ring, but, you know, on the mic as well. And I think often we talk about Kane and The Undertaker and Triple H and how these guys have had, and Goldust for that matter, the longevity and then the evolutions of their characters. And I think that Chris Jericho definitely belongs in that class as well, wrestling since approximately 1990. And the other thing I found weird is Jericho was only like 2.5 years older than me, which I find kind of funny that he's still in there and doing it and at the pace that he has been. It's just interesting to me the career he's had and the evolutions and, you know, not only the looks have changed, but the personalities and whatnot. And I think that is essential for any character. You know, obviously being healthy is probably the biggest key to a long career, but that being able to change and adapt. Now, where are you with Jericho now in 2019, 20 years later? He's in AEW. You know, he's taken some shots at WWE, whether they are justified or not, and you know, I'm not going to argue his experiences or his opinion on the company from when he was there. I find it interesting to hear his perspective now, and as the veteran in the locker room, will he be that guy who, you know, like you said earlier, he's become the guy that he was complaining about 20 years ago. Can you kind of explain more about what you mean on that front?
I shall try. you know, I mentioned before, I loved Jericho in WCW. I thought he was really good in WWE. I would say probably over the last maybe 5 years, I've kind of grown tired of Jericho, just because in the same way that I've grown tired of Mick Foley, of they leave, they come back, then they leave and they come back. And with Jericho, it always seemed like he was coming back, you know, right around the time to start to get into a WrestleMania match. And we've discussed before that, this means nothing in the grand scheme of things. And I'm sure if Jericho's listening, he's just going to call me a mark and, you know, have some choice words, whatever. But I do find, as a fan who respects what wrestlers do, for a guy to come in who's not a full-time wrestler and take a position that I think could have gone to someone else on the biggest show of the year, I find it a bit disrespectful. You know, if you want to come back, fine, but, you know, come back for SummerSlam, come back for Survivor Series. Just a personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm entitled to it, at least for another day or two. And then, so Jericho's coming back, and yes, I'll give him credit because he does reinvent himself and he freshens up the character, which, you know, I think that's one of the reasons you can look at a guy like John Cena, who, you know, I don't want to say a majority, but a vocal majority of fans have grown tired of, because John Cena has not really changed his character since, what, 2004, 2005?
Right, yeah. No, exactly.
And same way, you know, you look at Roman Reigns, who, when the Shield broke up, Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins kind of altered their personalities a little, changed ring gear. Roman Reigns is still wearing the black vest, the pants. You know, he's still only doing 3 moves per match, and I think fans get tired of that. So Jericho is great for reinventing himself. My issue with him now, other than, like I said, coming back going, is he, you know, when he was younger, he would complain about the Hogans, the Flairs, the, you know, Goldbergs, who weren't stepping aside and making room for the new talent. And in AEW, granted, they don't have a lot of, you know, they so far they've not been like Impact and just signed like every ex-WWE star that's out there. Jericho probably is the biggest name on their roster. Mm-hmm. And if they can use him to get over the new talent, then that is probably the best use for him. You know, so it's going to be interesting at All Out when he is challenging Hangman Page for the AEW title. It's like, will they have Hangman Page go over first to, and going over Jericho to kind of establish him, or will they give the title to Jericho in hopes that he can make the title prestigious for whoever then beats him later on down the road? And you know, part of my problem with Jericho is the social media thing, where, you know, his constant tweeting, and I guess this is where I'm an old, you know, not hip, because Twitter is the new thing, and you can get the message out there quicker. You can do it on a daily basis instead of, especially since AEW doesn't have television right now, so Jericho can send out all the, you know, I want to thank you tweets from the fans and play into his character of being, and part of it is, you know, he's being the character of what I dislike, and that is the guy who thinks he is owed everything because he's the ring veteran.
Is that a character, do you think, right now, or do you really think that's where Jericho is today?
I'll give him the benefit of the doubt and say it's probably the character, but I also have read his first three books, and they're good books, don't get me wrong. I highly recommend them to anyone, but the personality, the real Chris Jericho personality that came through in those books is... it kind of tainted the view of Jericho for me from a personal, like, separating the, and this is where you get into separating the character from the person.
Mm-hmm.
And we discussed, you know, I asked you a few weeks ago, a few episodes back on That's My 1-2-3 Cents about should characters stay, or should wrestlers stay in character 24/7, or are they, but, you know, can they split that difference? So I just, you know, I think part of it is just not the staleness, but I'm over Jericho. Again, it's been 20 years. I want something new. I think The Simpsons is really the only thing that's gone on that long that I'm still okay with.
Wow. Okay. So as we kind of wrap things up on Jericho and this week's episode, obviously, you know, WWE reintroduced the Hall of Fame in 2004 after they had taken a few year hiatus. I think 96 was the last time they had done an induction ceremony, and then revamped it and started doing a whole big to do the night before WrestleMania is starting in 2004, and every year since then it has become a spectacle of sorts, and you and I have sat through several induction ceremonies. Now that AEW is here, this is, you know, many are saying it's, you know, going to be the obvious legit competition, if you will, for WWE. Do you see these superstars that have worked for WWE that have jumped, and, you know, I guess Jericho is really at this point the only one, Cody Rhodes and Dustin obviously as well, at some point, but do you see WWE ceasing Hall of Fame inductions for guys who are under contract with AEW or closely associated with it? I know Jericho obviously is not going to wrestle forever. And obviously some of their Hall of Famers, Jim Ross. And then there's talk that perhaps Arn Anderson will be going over as well. Do you see that having an impact, pun not intended, on the Hall of Fame in the future? You know, because Jericho obviously had a Hall of Fame career, a first ballot Hall of Famer, in my opinion. But sometimes we see some pettiness rear its ugly head, and it seems like it's gotten better through the years. But this has become a what many are, you know, considering a legitimate threat now. Is Jericho's hopes for a Hall of Fame induction down the road in jeopardy, do you think? Or should it be?
No, it should not be, and it will only be as long as he is wrestling or under contract to AEW.
Mm-hmm.
I think once he is done wrestling, and which is also probably a good thing because I am not a fan of wrestlers going into the Hall of Fame while they're still wrestling, mm-hmm. like actively, not
sure.
You know, a sporadic thing. But also don't forget that WWE Hall of Famer Tully Blanchard is Sean Spears'
that's right.
manager in AEW.
That is a good point. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Jericho, I think Dustin, or Goldust, will be Hall of Fame inductees. You know, another topic we've discussed many times is I think the Hall of Fame class has been so huge over the last 10 years or so that WWE is running out of marquee names to put in.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, let's say Jericho is under contract for another 5 years. Well, that's five more Hall of Fame and, you know, ceremonies. Eventually, you're going to run out of top names to put in.
Yeah.
So if you're going to continue to do it and make it a big part of WrestleMania weekend, you're going to need the star power to get people in there.
That is, that's a good point.
It also depends on how well AEW does.
Right.
Because, as you said, right now everyone's looking at them as competition when, you know, their last two shows weren't as well received as their first two.
Mm-hmm.
And so it will be interesting to see how they do on a week to week basis.
And what their long game is, yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, you could probably be looking in the future that the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega will be WWE Hall of Fame inductees if AEW does not prove to be successful, or if it does prove to be successful, but in 20 years, WWE needs somebody to bring in to, you know, or if the ratings aren't there for TNT, but AEW's got a good product and Vince says, hey, let's put them on the network. Stranger things have happened.
That is true. That is true. Well, thanks for joining me on this journey down memory lane as we went back to 1999 to talk a bit about Chris Jericho, his jump to WWE, and then what would have happened had he decided to stick around and continue to toil in WCW. Chad, anything else you want to throw out before we wrap up this week's episode?
I just want to say, Chris Jericho, if you are listening, by some, like, you're stranded in an airport and have nothing better to do. I know.
Hey, man, this is my show.
I know you're playing in Los Angeles, opening for Iron Maiden in September. If you want to throw a couple tickets my way, I'll gladly take them. But other than that, just, you know, listen to Positive Cynicism. We got some great stuff coming up. It's a good show anyway when we have non-technical difficulties. And as we said in the beginning of the show, it's the positive cynicism message. It's just do something positive. Just show some gratitude. Daily act of gratitude is, it's help change the world one day at a time.
Well, you know what? That is the perfect way to end this week's episode. Friends, thanks so much for listening. And as Chad said, go out and do something positive today and make someone's day. Make someone else smile and feel happy as well. So thanks so much for listening. Have a great week, and we'll be back next week with Wrestling Under the Influence.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.